Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
First this morning, though, Israel's military chief Herzi Halevi said yesterday that Iran's weekend attack on Israel will be met with a response. Now, the question is when and what that response will look like after 300 drones and missiles were launched into Israel from Iran in the early hours of Sunday morning. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has had a difficult balancing act to maintain. On one side, right-wing members of the war cabinet are calling for a strong and swift response, while President Biden and the West are urging him to take the win and show restraint. Well, I'm joined on the line now by Tom Fletcher, a former British ambassador to Lebanon and foreign policy advisor to three former British prime ministers. Good morning, Tom. Good to have you with us again.
Good morning, Claire.
So we've had those lengthy meetings of the Israeli war cabinet in the hours since that attack at the weekend. How high are the stakes for Benjamin Netanyahu today?
Well, this is very high stakes poker. You know, Saturday night, the weekend, was an exceptionally fragile moment. And you've got a number of players now in the region who could be at risk of a major miscalculation. You know, we saw that calculated gamble from Bibi Netanyahu and the Israeli government in hitting the Iranian consulate on the 1st of April. And now we've seen that calculated gamble in response from the Iranian regime. You know, those 300 missiles that you described just then. You know, this is new terrain and it's high risk.
And what sort of pressures is he under? I mean, just go through them for us, because we have the heightened tensions since October the 7th, the public pressure he is under, but also from the media, his international colleagues, from those within his own cabinet too.
Yeah, there's enormous amounts of pressure. And in a way, it's something that he and the Iranians do have in common. They're under great pressure at home, lots of criticism at home, but also great pressure internationally for restraint. And remember, the context of the last couple of weeks is that dialing up of American calls from Biden down for the Israelis to show more restraint, to change the conduct of the war in Gaza. So he would be feeling all of that. And, you know, to add to that, Joe Biden's been very clear now, you know, take the win, as you say, don't pursue a further military offensive, you know, leave it there, call it, basically, and let's try to get back to talking about de-escalation in the region. Let's get back to talking about a ceasefire in Gaza and get back ultimately to talking about the great prize here, which is that peace process normalization with the whole region, which, of course, Biden will be saying to Netanyahu, also isolates this Iranian regime.
Mm-hmm. And the British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak is having a conversation with him today. Again, we expect, as we've been told, the British will be urging restraint. And what are the factors at play when it comes to how Netanyahu will hear that advice?
Well, I think it's, you know, I think everyone has realised over these last 6 months, you know, we had that terrible Hamas attack on October the 7th. We've had 6 months of brutal retaliation for that since, you know, real horror on the ground for civilians. I think we've realized through that period the limits of private persuasion. And Rishi Sunak in particular was one of those who early on said, we're going to mute our criticism in public because we'll be very tough in private and that will get results. And clearly that hasn't worked so far. I think what's maybe changed, I hope has changed over the weekend, is that Rishi Sunak will be able to say, look, don't pursue a unilateral military approach here, because when you were attacked, when you were seriously hit, or the Iranians attempted to seriously hit you over the weekend, the defense is held. Iron Dome is the most sophisticated defense system in the world, but also your allies were with you. You know, we had your back at that moment. And hopefully that buys him more leverage, allows him that little bit extra time with Netanyahu just to say, take the win, hold back, don't charge in, don't do what Iran might want you to do next and charge into an escalation of this conflict.
You'd wonder, though, if this will bolster Netanyahu in terms of what he seeks to do in Gaza now, because it showed when backs were against the wall at the weekend, the old allies all came together, despite what they had been saying to him about issues like humanitarian aid and going into Rafah.
Yes, and so clearly attention has moved, and often international diplomacy is a bit like a football match. People will charge after the ball, and it's harder then to see the overall pitch, you know, the overall strategic picture. And so the challenge actually in the conversation that diplomats are having is to actually get back to the real, creative, long-term strategic diplomacy. And that means, yeah, of course, condemn the Iranian strikes, defend Israel from further potential strikes. It means trying to prevent the escalation across the Israel-Lebanon border. It means talking to the region. I mean, it's very interesting that the region was basically looking to defend Israel from those Iranian strikes. Much of the Arab region is no friend of this Iranian regime. But also it means demonstrating in public and private that we care just as much about protecting Palestinian civilians from harm as we do about protecting Israeli civilians mm-hmm. from harm. So we've got to get back to that humanitarian conversation, get that ceasefire in place, get the hostages out, get the talks on those hostages accelerated, and get the aid in. You know, trucks and trucks of aid have got to be crossing those borders. We've got to get the Ashdod crossing open, and we've got to stop that further military offensive in Rafah. That is more important than ever after the weekend, and we can't lose sight of that.
Well, and the danger is that, you know, we do lose sight of that because all attention is focused on this now.
Yeah, and my hope, though, is that this weekend will sharpen the conversation. It will focus minds on this realization that the region is really close to meltdown, and that the hardliners in Hamas, in Iran, in the Israeli government want to bury that two-state solution. And there's no way out of this crisis, as you and I have discussed before, without Palestinians and Israelis living side by side in lands they call their own, with security, justice, and opportunity. And, you know, the great prize in all of this, and maybe this weekend reminds people of that, is that you could have this broader regional agreement where the Arab world effectively says, look, recognize the state of Palestine, we will normalize our relations with Israel, and then we can focus on this shared threat from this very particular Iranian regime, which is doing such damage across the region. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the great prize out there for diplomacy, and we need calm heads to prevail.
That's the prize, that's the hope. But on the other side of this, we could be entering into a very long period of tit for tat, at the very least, between Iran and Israel, couldn't we?
That's the risk. I mean, I think that, you know, in a way, there are three, we're maybe at a sliding doors moment, and there are three possible scenarios. One is more miscalculation from either Iran or the Israelis or others in the region, you know, including all those heavily armed proxies, which then drags people into this broader crisis. Or secondly, we could have a kind of continuing shadow war, which intensifies between Israel and Iran, but doesn't blow up into that full-blown conflict. Or maybe that third scenario, that Biden and other international leaders are able to bring that pressure to bear and get people to step back from this precipice and focus on a lasting, sustainable settlement in the region.
Mm-hmm. Can I go back to where this element of all of this started, the 1st of April, when Israel carried out, and it's accepted that Israel did this, they haven't denied it, that they carried out the attack on the Iranian embassy in Damascus. Why?
Well, they clearly felt there was a threat, from a very direct threat from Iran. They feel that Iran has been largely responsible for stirring up Hamas attacks, for backing the Hamas attacks on October the 7th, and obviously for heavily arming Hezbollah just across the border. So it's part of this ongoing shadow war, if you like, between Israel and Iran. But it was a direct escalation of that to actually mm-hmm. take the battle to Iranian territory in that way and say, we're not going to hit your proxies, we're actually going to hit you. We're going to hit your diplomatic building in Damascus. So it was a very significant escalation, and they would have known that Iran would want to try and respond, that it couldn't just accept that. If we're trying to find positives over the weekend, one is that the Israeli defense is held under sustained pressure. But another is that Iran heavily telegraphed that response. They basically told them when and where the retaliation would come, which made it easier to deter it, made it easier to see off those missiles.
You've used the word miscalculation a number of times when you're looking ahead at what might happen in response. Do you think that what Israel did in Syria was a miscalculation?
Well, I don't think anyone should be going around attacking diplomatic premises. I mean, I think that it's very clear under international law that that's not allowed. And, you know, it was a major risk to run. So as I say, it's high stakes poker, and we need calmer heads to prevail. I thought it was persuasive, actually, when David Cameron was talking about the need for head and heart at this moment, and not just to charge back into this tit-for-tat retaliation being driven very much by emotion and by the moment, but actually to step back and think, what's in our real strategic interests here?
What about the Chinese intervention here, calling for restraint? Well, saying that Iran, in their view, is willing to exercise restraint. How important is China in all of this?
I think it's playing an increasingly important role. And of course, if we are going to pursue the diplomatic track, then much of that will happen in New York at the UN Security Council, with China having a very powerful voice in that conversation. But China also has relationships, networks in the region, including with Iran, that many others don't. And so they can bring pressure to bear. So I think it's very encouraging that they're in that conversation. They clearly do not want this escalation. They don't want that broader regional conflict. And so in a time when diplomacy is needed, we need everyone to be there around the table, working on the people they can talk to restrain themselves.
Mm-hmm. When we're talking about just how high stakes this is, we have the International Atomic Energy Agency chief saying that they're concerned about a strike on Iranian nuclear facilities. Iran's nuclear capabilities, Tom, how much does that play into the urgency now for the international community to deal with this and to dampen down the mood here?
Well, it's obviously very much a factor in Israel's thinking and also in the United States' thinking, because, you know, never mind those 300 missiles at the weekend, you know, the threat of a nuclear weapon is of course much, much more dramatic. Now, we don't know how close Iran really is to that. I would still argue that the nuclear talks, you know, the Barack Obama process was the best way to avoid that risk of Iran succeeding in getting a nuclear weapon, and the best way to prevent the risk of them using it. I would always argue that diplomacy is better than trying to actually go after the threat of those weapons with military strikes, because that just really increases the risk of that conflagration in the region.
Tom, thank you very much. Tom Fletcher, former British ambassador to Lebanon and foreign policy advisor to three former British prime ministers, Blair, Brown and Cameron. And Tom's new novel called The Assassin is out now. Now, at this morning's cabinet meeting, we're expecting the Taoiseach Minister for Foreign Affairs, Micheál Martin, to seek approval to increase by 33 the number of Irish peacekeepers serving in Lebanon. He'll also request that the UN FIL mission is extended for another year. The additional personnel are intended to enhance the security of the Irish battalion amid the heightened threat level in the region. Also later on in the programme, in the next hour, the Israeli ambassador to Ireland, Dana Ehrlich, will be here. Up next, though, doctors claim cancer services are being underfunded.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.